You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun, a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. It is a great podcast that you're listening to. It is so good, in fact, that you should go to the iTunes podcast store and give us 5 stars and a review, right? Isn't that right, Vince?
Yeah,
isn't that
definitely
what they should do?
Give us a review. Yeah. As long as it's good. And if it's not, va fangul.
That means up your ass in Spanish or Italian. One of them.
I think it means va fanculo, which means go for the butt. But somehow
go for the butt.
That translates. Which is
that's my catchphrase on stage, by the way. isn't that generally?
True.
That's what I go.
It's your personal mantra, really.
That's my personal mantra. That's how I choose to live my life. I like to va fon ghoul. So yeah, give us 5 stars in a review. I mean, after that last bit, how could you not? You know, it's good stuff. Good stuff. Today, in the virtual Pod Yourself a Gun studio, we have a very special guest. You know her from the Hollywood Crime Scene podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Rachel Fisher.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Rachel.
Hi.
How you doing?
Thanks for having me on. This is very exciting.
Yeah, it's a very exciting podcast. You know, I mean, who doesn't love listening to a Sopranos podcast 20 years after the show came out? You know,
this is the kind of stuff I'm into. Like, my co-host and I were like, what if we did a Melrose Place podcast? So
yeah,
this is right up my alley.
Can I ask, So your shirt says live, laugh, love, which I love because I'm big into word art. But what's the picture? I can't entirely
see. Bill Murray.
Oh, nice.
In a bathtub with a toaster.
Oh, okay. From Groundhog Day. Love it.
Yeah, it's Groundhog Day. My friend Allie Siegel, she made this.
Nice. So, nice.
Yeah.
That's how I choose to live my life as well, you know, just in a bathtub, ready to die. That's how
I thought you were going to say laughing and loving. But I mean, sure. Yeah. Suicide. That's also
suicide's funny. I think we can all agree. No one has ever been sad at suicide. Moving on from the subject of self-murder. Rachel, are you a fan of The Sopranos?
I am. And, you know, I watched the show way after the series finale. I watched it, you know, I was able to binge watch it with HBO Go, which was nice. But I obviously remember when it premiered. I had HBO growing up. It was very fancy in my house. We had HBO.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember it coming on and being like, I don't want to watch this shit. Because I was like, you know, I was like a 13, you know, when it premiered. And
I just
was like, not really, like, the whole gangster thing just didn't appeal to me at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But when my friend Desi, who's also my co-host, explained to me, she's like, it's not about gangsters, it's a soap opera.
Yeah.
And I was like, she was like, it's like Melrose Place, which is one of my favorite shows of all time. And yeah. I watched, I'm like, this is like Melrose Place.
You know, like, now I feel like I need to watch Melrose Place because it was like one of those shows I knew existed.
But like, I have no idea really deep down. Yeah.
It's just that it's like the interpersonal drama and it's about mm-hmm. a family. And the thing I love about The Sopranos, it's genuinely one of the funniest TV shows, I think.
Yes, 100%.
And that this is really my favorite genre of TV show where a show is not a comedy. It's not billed as a comedy, but it is funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, completely.
It's a great show.
Yeah. It definitely is like a show that it can appeal. And we've said this before on the podcast that it can appeal to kind of both types of people. One is the person who watches it and goes, oh, this is actually just a really funny, dark comedy. Yeah. Like it's not necessarily, it's in the gangster genre, but it's more a comedy. But it also appeals to the person who has like a Scarface poster above their bed and totally. Is like, yeah, Scarface is cool, dude. Cause like he fucking does coke and he fucks women and he lives life to the fullest.
He got
like,
the money and then he got the power and then he got the women, which is pretty badass when you think about it.
Yeah, so it's something that I love about it is that it's like a fairly versatile show. Like you can be super dumb and watch the show, and I count myself as kind of in that bucket of people. Like, you know, I enjoy, you know, delving deeply into into
those
film.
People that just belong in a bucket like a bunch of sloppy feed pigs.
Listen, we're all piggies deep down.
That's true.
And we're all just yearning for our delicious content slop. Mm-hmm. And this was early on when I watched it, because I didn't watch it till like the maybe fourth or fifth season. And yeah, so for me at that point in my life, I was young enough that I was like, oh man, this is cool. This is like Godfather, but like fucking, you know, like what if Godfather was a TV show? And then it was like a season into it where I was like, this show is actually very refined and a very good show. I turned, you know, into a very smart person.
That's when you got into your pretentious stage that we all go through.
Yeah. That's when I started wearing glasses. It was a whole thing. But yeah, we're very excited to have you on, especially for this episode. It is a Christmas episode, and we'll get into that in a moment. But first, we must play the theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, today's episode, we are going to be talking about from season 3, episode 10 of The Sopranos, and the episode is called To Save Us All from Satan's Power. And this episode premiered April 29th, 2001. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
A somnolent visit with the ghosts of Christmas past lands Tony back on Melfi's couch. With the annual pork store holiday party approaching, Bacala reluctantly agrees to don the Santa suit that Pussy used to wear. Tony and Furio have a holiday surprise in store for the Russian who roughed up Janice.
Yeah, that is basically what happens. HBO Max adding a little bit of like Christmas flair to that. I like that, you know?
Yeah, they kind of went a little bit highbrow on that one, you know?
Yeah.
Somnolent ghost. I don't know about that.
Yeah, no. This is a word that I'm still unsure of. What is somnolent?
Somnolent, I believe, means sleepy, which I guess is a reference to, you know, the narcoleptic dude whose name I forget. But I don't think the ghosts themselves were somnolent. But you know, whatever. I guess. Because they're sleeping, they're somnolent. They come to him in dreams. I guess that makes sense. All right, I take it back. I guess that works.
I mean, I feel like the HBO Max like description writers think they're better than me, and it annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah.
I think they're smarter. Well, you know what? Fuck you. I'm not even going to look up Cromulent.
That's right.
Before we get into breaking down the episode, I think it's important to know what was happening during the time, don't you think, Vince?
Cultural context is important. You cannot separate the art from the time period in which it appears. And that's why we have a little something that we like to call the Remember When machine.
Walk, walk. Teddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember then.
Remember.
Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
That's right. So we're at April 29th, 2001. President George W. Bush had just reached his 100th day, and he had a 57% approval rating at this point in his presidency.
Is that good or bad? I can't tell anymore.
That's comparable to evaluations of his father and predecessor, Bill Clinton, but the economy could take a toll.
Ugh,
that's not the only thing.
Shit was about to hit the fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the things about like these early Sopranos episodes when we do the Remember When machine. You're waiting. You're slowly getting to the moment. You're like, come on, 9/11. I know you're coming.
Yeah.
And it's shit's like gonna get weird.
They don't know how bad shit's gonna get. That's what every look back the last 20 years. Super fun. Another story. This is from the New York Post. It's very relevant, I thought. How the Dapper Don whacked his mafia. It's about how basically John Gotti ruined the mafia. 40 years ago, the mob was at the peak of its power. It controlled the Teamsters Union and its vast pension fund. It dominated dozens of construction unions. It ran the private carting industry. It was in drugs. It owned the heavyweight champion, Sonny Liston. Today, prosecutors believe the mob's power over the economy is much diminished, reduced to service industries like loan sharking, gambling, discos, and topless bars. A federal prosecutor told me, now the mafia is just another gang trying to compete with the Russians, Chinese, Albanians, and Colombians. Their smartest leaders are all dead or in prison. Peter Moss has written bestsellers about Joe Valachi and Sammy Gravano. John Gotti did more to bring down the mafia than anybody except Valachi and Robert Kennedy, Moss told me. Gotti loved publicity. He invited all the unwelcome scrutiny of the mob by being flamboyant, wanting to be a celebrity and thumbing his nose at the FBI. And then the writer of Goodfellas, Nicholas Pileggi, Gotti took the mob back to the 1920s. He did more to ruin the mob than the FBI. Gotti killed Paul Castellano, who was a big earner. Castellano had moved the Gambino family into legitimate businesses. He spent more time with bankers than in social clubs. Paulie was a modern guy. Gotti didn't understand banking and business. He was a street thug, a hijacker. He killed the boss with guys who weren't even made. He made them afterwards. Gotti was a throwback.
Damn. You know, it's so sad to see them shitting on such a gentle soul like Paul Gotti. I was thinking of Paul Giamatti.
He is gentle.
I would never want to shit on Paul Giamatti. I love him.
I
yeah, no. But Paul Giamatti, first of all, he would never ruin the mafia. Yeah.
No.
But he does look like a guy really who gets about shit it. On a lot. Yeah.
Yeah,
people do shit on Paul Giamatti, and I think it's completely unfair. I mean, this guy, he's never been a more consistent actor in the world. This guy can play Paul Giamatti in the 20s. He can play Paul Giamatti in 2013. He can play Paul Giamatti in the 1800s. I have never seen a better Paul Giamatti.
Agreed.
But yeah, I like that article is basically... You know, talking about it's a little bit like,
remember,
you know,
the
mafia,
good old days of the mafia.
The mafia used to have respect. Like there's a little bit of that in there. You know, it's like this guy, he wanted to be a big shot and he killed a big earner. I feel like people used to write about the mafia back in the day just really, really wanted to be in the mafia, but they were too cowardly.
Yeah.
So
the top movies in the country were Driven. That is the Sylvester Stallone IndyCar movie. Bridget Jones' Diary and and Spy Kids. Those are holdovers from last week.
Mm. Yeah.
The top song was All For You by Janet Jackson.
Nice.
And then in terms of rock, it was It's Been a While by Staind, which I feel like ushered in. ushered in an era of like all the worst, just mopey, awful.
Yeah,
that was such a terrible era for music.
This was such a bad era.
Yeah,
it's a bad era for pop music and rock, but more specifically rock music.
Yeah. Rock music, really, this is like, it's going to hit a low for a while, because I feel like Stained kind of blew the conch shell to let all of the post-grunge rock in, and everyone was like, all right, guys, let's retrofit our grunge bands from the 90s and make them today.
Yeah, well,
It's the constipated rock singer.
Yeah, yes,
band.
Exactly.
That's what it is. Who was the other? Nickelback came right after
Nickelback,
them.
Creed,
it's
just a lot of people.
The underbite singing, like, we're going. Yeah. But I think Stain specifically is like a post Limp Bizkit phenomenon. Where
Limp Bizkit
and Papa Roach came out, and they were like, man, let's be mad and break stuff. And there was something pure to that, but then Stained and like Aaron Lewis and like that other Days of the New came out, and they were like, you don't have to be mad, you can just be sad and like have a bong next to you. And I was like, oh.
It really was like the same flavor but a different emotion. Definitely a response to nu metal, but it was kind of the same thing.
It was sad nu metal.
It was nu metal balladry. Ugh.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. They were like, how can this music be worse and less authentic? And they're like, make it sad. People will love it. And there was a time when, like, for me, like, this song spoke to me, dude.
Oh, no.
Like, and because
this song, it's been a while.
It's been a while. Yeah, wait, dude. Listen, as
were you
a
in
kid,
high school?
I was in, I think I was in, yeah, like ninth grade when this came out.
Me too.
Yeah, it was, and for me, it was like, what I liked about it was I have no idea what the song is about while I'm listening to it. I'm just enjoying the melody, and then randomly he just goes like, I cannot blame it on my father, and you're just like, oh, it's about his dad. Hell yeah, dude, I feel you, because when you're in ninth grade, you're like, dude, it's my fucking dad, that's the problem.
Right.
So there's something about, you know, 30-year-old men singing about their dad and being sad that really touched me as a 14-year-old, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, that was my music. I feel bad for the fact that it looks like Shaggy's Angel has finally been knocked off the list.
Ugh, yeah. Think of how much better things would have been if Shaggy had just been at the top of the charts for a little bit longer instead of...
Yeah.
Stained. Yeah. It'd been nice.
Could have stopped.
I don't understand how music works, because like the number one song on the top 40 charts is somehow different than the number one song on the top 100 charts, and I don't really understand how that works.
It's a grift. Someone is making extra money making separate lists. I
feel like you could just do like a sampling of like what were the songs they were most playing on the pop station, what were the songs they were most playing on the rap station and rock station.
I do think you're right. I think it was tied into radio somehow. So like there are top 100 stations and then there were top 40 stations. And I think it's like it's just your playlist is different. So
and I believe that that Stain song was number one on the rock station, because I could not fucking get away from it.
No, it was everywhere. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't want to, dude. I wanted to live in that song. That was shit.
Look, I listened to equally embarrassing music in 2001. A lot of it wasn't current music, but it was still embarrassing nonetheless.
Yeah. Interesting cultural context for the time.
It's
good to know what was going on.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. So today... like I said before, we're going to be talking about season 3, episode 10 of The Sopranos, To Save Us All from Satan's Power.
Can I talk? So like the title, quite an overwrought title. I don't really even know what this was a reference to. Did they say it at some point in the show?
No, I was waiting for it. I was waiting for maybe there was like a background song, maybe the song at the end. But as far as I could tell, I have no idea what the title of this episode means. Did you catch anything, Rachel?
I mean, if it has to do with Christianity, I have no idea.
According to Wikipedia, the episode's title is taken from a verse of the Christmas carol, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, which I have never heard of that song.
I don't know that one.
I don't even have the excuse of being Jewish. I don't know what that... I've never heard that Christmas carol.
God Rest Ye?
Yeah. God rest ye merry gentlemen.
What does God rest ye even mean, dude? This is like Christian shit's weird.
Between merry and gentlemen. So like God rest ye merry gentlemen. Like,
yeah.
I don't
okay.
Even...
So that makes more sense. So get a nice. I hope God gives you a good sleep, guys. Right? Is
that, I guess.
Is that not it?
That's weird. I don't know.
Well, it's a very strange title, but it does kind of get to the fact that this is a Sopranos Christmas special. And because we've already done their synopsis, I think it is time for me to just go through the Bada B stories.
Yeah. Tell us, Matt, what are the Bada B stories? And definitely don't rhyme them.
No, why would I? No, very simply, the Bada B stories are Jingle Bells, Christian Rock Sells, Divorce Looks Good on Charmaine, Tony Makes a Christmas List and Sticks a Russian Under a Sleigh, Jingle Bells, Melfi Fails, Bobby Is Forced to Play, Oh What Fun It Is to Remember a Friend You Blew Away. Hey, guys, thank you.
That was great.
I rarely sing on this, this podcast. So... just kind of general thoughts getting into this episode. I've noticed that it's kind of rare that an American TV show does a Christmas special. Like you see that a lot on British TV. They fucking love a Christmas special.
Didn't they have, we had Christmas episodes, didn't we?
We had Christmas episodes, not so much Christmas specials, but even the Christmas episodes, I felt like they were always kind of, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is that Christmas episodes are vaguely Christmassy, but they're not about the spirit of Christmas. Mm. Whereas I felt like this to me, this episode,
the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. Well, no. But like the spirit of like togetherness. I don't know anything about the Holy Spirit, but the spirit of Christmas, you know, is kind of like permeates these UK series Christmas specials, right? And this episode to me felt the most like a British Christmas special that you would see on like BBC. Like to me, it was like they did a Christmas special that like truly captures the spirit of Christmas, you know, it's a season for giving, you know, it's like giving gifts to your family that you pretend to enjoy, like a Big Mouth Billy Bass or sweaters. It's a season for sharing like memories of good friends who turned out to be snitches and then you murdered them. A season for goodwill towards Janice, you know, by like giving her sweet vengeance and whatnot. And then also, you know, it's a season, most importantly, for those who believe in Jesus to purchase Janice's upcoming Christian contemporary record. Like to me, it's very, everything about it is like, it's the spirit of Christmas meets Sopranos, and I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, I definitely, like, this isn't one of my favorite episodes of The Sopranos necessarily, but I do think it is possibly the best Christmas episode of any show that I can think of.
Yeah, I really liked it. Rachel, like when I assume, you know, you've seen other TV shows do Christmas specials. Mm-hmm. Where does this rank for you in the Christmas special genre?
I would say it's the best as well, because off the top of my head, the only Christmassy specials on shows I can think of are awful, syrupy, sweet, like Full House or.
Yes.
Like sitcoms from when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, exactly. It's like this one, because it's the Sopranos, they're able to skirt the line. It's like, this what makes Sopranos good is basically the formula is super violent scene and a song that is completely contrasts with the scene that you're watching. It's kind of like that's a very mafia thing, right? And
absolutely.
So like to have the... To have like a Christmas backdrop on a episode in which they're kind of reminiscing about their best friend that they murdered is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Well, in this Christmas episode of TV, it's also very grounded in reality. Whereas I feel like a lot of Christmassy episodes, they'll kind of go towards magical realism.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, yes.
True. I mean, 100%. has some magical realism, but it's mostly in the form of dream sequences.
Yeah, that's not magical realism, though. That right. To me, yeah. I feel like Christmas specials will have, like, at the very least, Santa will show up. And it's like, was that the real Santa?
Yes.
And then they blow their fucking brains out. Like, this one, it is, it just kind of serves as a backdrop. There's no magic to it, though there is a dream sequence.
It opens with Tony at Asbury Park, and for some reason, well, it's like a double flashback. There's a thing that a lot of movies and TV do where when someone wants to reminisce, they stare out at a body of water. Like there's a whole genre of introspective moments near bodies of water, and so in this, it's that plus, like, it starts and he's at Asbury Park, and immediately you're kind of like, ah, shit, is this going to be a dream sequence episode?
Yeah, that's
because
what I thought, too.
There was a dream sequence episode already that
opened at Asbury Park.
And then, so it's like, the water reminds Tony, and then the Asbury Park reminds us, and then there's like, it's that, it puts us in the dream sequence reminiscing state of mind right off the bat. And it was great because it didn't, I don't think it wasn't really too heavily dream based. It was mostly just flashback based.
And it's a flashback episode.
They did an interesting thing with the flashback, which is it's a flashback to 1995, which we know because the OJ trial is on television, and they really hammered, like, the OJ references. And then, like, at this point, you know, it's 2001 when the episode came out. So this is only 6 years ago, but Tony nonetheless has, like, hair. He has more hair, so we can tell flashback Tony.
And he's wearing a bowling shirt, which is very mid-90s.
He looks like he's in a swing band.
Totally.
I had a black and white bowling shirt with a martini embroidered on this thing, and I thought
hell
it was I thought it was the coolest shit ever. And I remember getting, like, some grown man, like, complimented me while I was at a urinal with my fucking martini. That's how cool the martini bowling shirt was in, like, the mid-90s. That it was just, was the shit.
Dude, I wanted one of those so bad. I was, all I had was a really long chain wallet.
I never had a chain wallet. I somehow managed to not have that or JNCO pants, but...
So glad I never did the JNCO.
Did not do that. So there's one scene in... I actually had to pause it and rewind it because, you know, they show Jackie Jr. In flashback when he's, like, just a high schooler. And his pants are so fucking baggy that I had to rewind it. They weren't even JNCO pants. It was just, like, what regular dress pants look like in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And it looked like you could fit, you know, like, two... 6-year-olds in each leg of the pants is how big they were.
Oh, I miss it, man. I miss those baggy pants
which
days.
I think was, like, the inspiration for Donald Trump's tailor, because all of his clothes kind of fit like that. Like, his
they
ties
look like
too
shit.
Long. His ties are too long, his pant legs are too wide, and all of his shit is just billowing constantly, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it's weird because that's like, it's a look that if you were to draw it without, like, the Trump person as, like, the subject, you would be like, oh, you're drawing a down and out fella, you know?
Like, yeah, like a fucking Charlie Chaplin-esque tramp.
Right, exactly. But that's just that motherfucker style. But yeah, I wore baggy pants until college. And it was because nobody told me that pants were getting thinner, and it was a revelation when I realized, like, oh, this is what I have to do. And I'm still to this day bummed out about it, because baggy pants were the most comfortable pants, you know.
Yes.
It's hard for me to separate the trends from the natural growing up process, because I think as a boy, you know, every kid from, like, fourth grade through, like, you know, seventh or eighth grade, depending on when you mature, all your shit's super baggy because you're, like, trying to look older and disguise your, like, scrawny body. And then, right around like later in high school, or for me later in high school, probably like, you know, 17, 18 years old, your shit starts getting tighter when you're like trying to show off your muscles all of a sudden. And I don't know if that was the general trend of culture or if that is the universal trend of male clothing.
Of growing up? No, yeah. It can't be, because like if you look at... you know, if you were to see a video of college kids in 1995, they were also doing the baggy thing. They were also sagging and everything. It was like, you know, I think it was just kind of the style. It wasn't the age group. It was the style. I think that at some point somebody said, what about tight pants in the early 2000s?
Yeah, and people were pockets.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the baggy pants had the most pockets, and it was one of the things I loved about it, because I loved putting things in pockets, you know? Yeah,
I still do.
Wow.
Extra stuff.
Yeah. Right now, now all my t-shirts have a chest pocket, because I like to have a place to put my earbuds and or face mask.
Your phone.
Yeah.
Oh, a face mask. Oh,
look at
okay.
you.
Yeah, I mean, things definitely pants. There was like a moment where all of a sudden it was like tight pants for all the guys. Like if you baggy pants were just suddenly gone.
Yeah.
It was just not a thing anymore.
I missed it completely.
It's a funny thing. Like I can tell what year it is based on, for men, it is the pant size and shoe shape. And then for girls, it is pants height and eyebrow thickness. Like the eyebrow thickness is there is a very specific, like for some reason in like 2003 to like 2009, it was every girl had the thinnest, most overplucked eyebrows. And it's very, and now we've gone completely the other direction where they're like filled in and super thick.
Big and bold and.
Yeah. And also low cut pants, which always was something that like you'd see a commercial for. And as a dude, I'd be like, oh, that's so hot.
Yeah.
And then... because
you
could
see
you
more
would,
of the...
Yeah, you could see more
of
it.
You could almost see the butt.
Yeah.
You could see the butt. That was the promise.
Well, back in the day, we wanted to see the top of the butt. And now we like to see the bottom of the butt. Like, it's changed.
That's true.
The part of the butt that you...
That's true.
That you get hard for is different.
All 4 years of high school I was in high school from 2000 to 2004. And I have to say the state of fashion for women at that time was abominable.
Yeah.
And I had the hardest time. Like I literally did. I grew up like in the San Francisco Bay Area. So like we have access to a ton of thrift stores and stuff. Like I did most of my shopping in high school at thrift stores because I fucking hated low cut pants.
Yeah.
I could not stand them. They're so uncomfortable. And it's like, you know, it's like the thong popping out of them.
Yeah. It's funny because every woman I know who somehow where I've like been in the room while they're maybe like looking through Instagram or something and they see low cut pants, they have a visceral reaction to it where they'll see it and they'll go, ugh, because it just floods memories of just the worst trend in fashion.
Well, and I did have low cut jeans because if you wanted to buy a pair of jeans, like unless you found the perfect vintage pair, and it's like women, like for me, like as like my body type or whatever, like I have a hard time fitting into jeans. So like I had low cut jeans. And every picture of me from in like 2004, my underwear, and like it wasn't even a thong, it was just a big lacy band is just sticking out of every fucking picture of me in those jeans.
And girls take that as embarrassing, but dudes are like, oh, look at her underwear. Yeah.
Girls are like, I could see a little.
Yeah, I got a little taste of her underwear.
Yeah. It was super hot, so cool. Yeah.
It was very like a beach skank was like the dominant fashion mode in like
beach skank.
The
yeah.
Early 2000s.
Beach
like,
skank is a
just like over bleached hair, over plucked eyebrows, like your underwear kind of hanging out, and like you're showing a lot of belly.
Yeah.
I had white blonde hair. It was like white blonde, but I had the white
I did too,
blonde.
Ironically.
Oh, yay! But I also had the black underneath because I was like, I was cool. I was alternative.
Oh, yeah, that is alternative. Yeah.
So I had like the half white blonde and then the black underneath that. But yeah, I mean, then I got into the spray tan thing. Like, I'm not gonna lie, like 2007 hit.
Yeah.
That was like everyone was orange.
Yeah, everyone was orange.
I always
dude.
Think my favorite time capsule from the aughts is there's this Canadian boy band called Before Four. Someone sent me this like, I don't know, 10 years ago. And it is just like the perfect aughts time capsule because they all have like the ice spiker hair with like a lot of highlights in it. And they're just like bright fucking orange and then wearing wife beaters with like shiny necklaces. And it all
that was the look thing. Yeah, that was the look.
It's a good look. Good look. So back to Sopranos for a second. Tony, like you said, is looking out you know, at the ocean and reminiscing, but he's also on the phone talking about a boat, which kind of leads me to one of the devices that they use to kind of give you some of the plot points that are going on. And that's Tony's Christmas list. Mm-hmm. So Tony has a Christmas list, which the list goes as follows. It's on the top, it's boat. Then it's gift for Carm. Then it's transfer cannolis, and then it's scooter.
Yeah, where is he transferring those cannolis to?
No idea why he decided to use the word transfer.
You get charged a big fee when you have to transfer cannolis. It's
like exactly. That's a 5% fee on cannoli transfers.
I'm overdrafted to my eyes and custard over here.
I gotta say, as much as this Sopranos is also secretly a comedy, it's also secretly a show about food. I mean, maybe not secretly, but it's among being many different kinds of shows, like it is a show about food, and I love food. I talk about food all the time. Like, it's one of my favorite subjects in the world. Yeah. And this show makes me so hungry. And even though like cannolis was a metaphor in this instance, I was craving a cannoli the whole time I was watching this. I have been inspired to cook certain things after watching episodes of The Sopranos before. Like, I bought ziti one time, like, because I was like, I'm gonna make baked ziti.
Former guest Mike Isaac, he ever since he was on the show a few weeks ago, his timeline is now all Sopranos shit, and he did the exact same thing. Yesterday he posted a picture of Janice trying to eat Bobby Bacala's wife's ziti and said, this scene has inspired me to make baked ziti. And same with me. As soon as you see ziti on the show, you're like, that looks like the cheesiest, delicious thing ever. Also, you did something just now, Rachel, which was you actually explained to, I think, both Vince and I what transfer cannolis meant. I didn't realize it was a metaphor. I thought he had to get cannolis from like Satrials or something. And I was like, I don't know why I use it. Just why don't you write buy cannolis for a party? You're right. He was transferring money. That's.
Yeah,
I didn't pick up on that either because I'm done.
I didn't pick up on
also,
that.
Also, I like cannolis. I just think, you know, if you're making a show about Italians, they have to be talking about food half the time because that's it's just kind of what we do.
It's a thing, dude. You people love food. So throughout this episode, like a big theme that runs through it is Tony kind of like processing his guilt with what happened to Big Pussy and kind of feeling bad about it, you know, for a multitude of reasons. And Polly being the exact opposite, kind of just like emotionally unavailable sociopath. And it's like the worst kind of friend to have if you need a shoulder to cry on. I understand why he's mad at Big Pussy. You never snitch. Snitching is against the rules. But come on, man. Like, he's so mean. And actually, I have a clip of Polly talking about Big Pussy.
You got a friend in me.
Don't waste another second on that rat fuck.
You got a friend in me.
I'd kill him again if I could.
Two-faced fuck.
That fat piece of shit. Let him stay with the fish.
Yeah, you got a friend.
And he fucked me in the ass. It was a rat bastard. Fuck Santa Claus.
Just
so, can I just say that the murder of Big Pussy, I feel like, and sort of the dichotomy of like Polly's you know, sort of callous, fuck that guy, and then mm-hmm. Tony wrestling with this. I feel like if this were something that was happening to someone in real life, and some this would be like Twitter discourse for an entire day.
If somebody
were to post a thread that was like, if you murdered your friend for snitching you out to the feds, it's valid. Your feelings of being sad are totally valid. And then we would get someone like the Polly character who would quote tweet that and be like, go fuck yourself. Like, they're the fucking police. They're the cops. This person loves cops. Like, and then it would just start. And then the discourse would continue for like 24 hours and Twitter would just be a nightmare all day.
Yeah, yeah. Brett Stevens of the New York Times would write an article like, oh, when is it okay to forgive someone for being canceled via being shot in a boat for snitching? Like, the discourse, you're exactly right. This is 100% online discourse where the binary is basically like, sometimes I feel sad even for people, even if they're flawed. And if you feel sad for them, fuck you and fuck that person forever. You're as bad as that person.
You are a simp and you are also canceled.
You are a simp and you are also canceled. So Polly definitely represents the side of the internet that is the most unforgiving and just the worst to talk to. But then again, the entire discourse is bad. Go ahead.
One question I did have about this episode is that, you know, they flash back. They're trying to figure out when Big Pussy got turned, and that's kind of the whole gist of this entire flashback, is they're trying to figure out, you know, mm-hmm. when the FBI turned him. And this is like the first mention of Big Pussy's bad back. And it's still sort of an open question whether Big Pussy's bad back is actually that, or if it is some sort of psychosomatic guilt symptom that he has based on going to the FBI.
So I have a theory about that, and it's not so much between it, those to me aren't the options. It's whether or not his bad back is real, whether or not it's psychosomatic or, you know, an actual like some sort of bulging disc, or is this entire thing just kind of been a ploy to, you know, to kind of distract from what he's doing. I mean, he's used his bad back in previous episodes to, you know, try to not go to the sauna because he was wearing a wire. You know, he uses bad back to explain why he had to like go back to Boca and hide out for a while. It's like his bad back has been, so it's either a lie or it's not. And I noticed something in this episode where Tony no longer trusts people who say they are injured. And so the scene where I noticed that was when he goes to visit Janice, and Janice is talking about having a wrist injury from her scuffle with the Russians a few episodes back. And his reaction to it is to kind of like look at his wife as if like, we've talked about this. We know she's full of shit whenever she's injured.
Because it's Janice.
Because it's Janice, and you know,
and it's,
to be fair, she would lie about that in order to garner sympathy.
Like, that was just like the perfect Janice move, which is to demand that they have Christmas Day dinner over at her house, and then get Carmela to cook half of the food. But then when she comes over, her whole kitchen is a disaster. And then Carmela then has to clean her kitchen in order to cook in it, which is...
Doesn't she also want to cook a goose?
Yes.
Yes.
Look, I'm sorry. Janice is kind of the worst. I mean, I know that's like a general consensus. I mean, like the actress who plays her, she nails it.
Oh, she's incredible.
She nails the insufferable sister. Mm-hmm. Who, I mean, she is like... That is a kind of insufferable that is so grounded in reality because it just creeps up on you over time.
Yeah.
Where you just want to be like, will you just shut the fuck up?
Yeah.
After a while. I mean, just the fact that she gets into this relationship immediately after having this traumatic event happen to her, and she mm-hmm. moves the guy in, and suddenly she's a Christian out of nowhere. She's the person. She's the person who you know, who you might not be close friends with, but you see their posts online and like they're just into stuff really hardcore for like 3 months. And then they just never talk about it again.
Yeah.
And they're always constantly drawing you into their bullshit. Like you can't, like you try to skate above whatever bullshit thing they're doing, but they make it impossible. They're like, they have to wrap you up in it somehow. Like Tony has to get wrapped up in her stupid fight over the fucking records to the point where, you know, in this episode, they have to go beat up the Russians who roughed up Janice for perfectly reasonable reasons.
Yeah, stealing Svetlana's leg. She stole her prosthetic leg to get records back. I mean, Janice is a sociopath on so many levels. And I completely agree. And I've said this before, but I have at least one friend who's in my life still to this day who is my Janice. She's someone who I've known for so long that she's like a sister. So that I could never like not answer a phone call or not text back. Like it would just be too rude, but it's like, there's always a grift at play and you just kind of, you accept, I'm just waiting for the day where I've got $1,000 set aside. 'Cause she's going to ask for it one day. She's gonna be like, I need $1,000. I'm going to be like, I know, I've known for years that one day this would come.
She's gonna try and get you involved in a MLM and a multi-level marketing scheme.
She sold Cutco knives in college.
Really? Like, okay, well, there you go.
She tried to sell me on the knives, and I was like, I don't need sharp knives. Like, I don't cook.
Have a kitchen.
Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s. And he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My favorite thing that really just speaks to how good The Sopranos is as a show is that Janice's new boyfriend, like when he was introduced a couple episodes ago, you think that this guy is just going to be the perfect one-off character where he's like, okay, yeah. He comes from a prayer group. He is a narcoleptic. That's good for like three really good jokes. We don't ever have to hear about him again. But in this episode, they like flesh him out even more, and it's just keeps getting better and better because now we've found out that like Janice, just as an aside, says they're not sleeping together anymore. So I guess they're just he's just her friend and like songwriting partner, and they have a couple scenes where he and Janice are writing songs together. And just everything, all of his reactions to her are so bizarre. Like they're like nothing that you've ever seen before on one hand. And like the words that are coming out of his mouth don't sound like anything anyone would ever say. And yet they're so perfect for this character and they somehow make him even more real.
Yeah, no, they are, they're a perfect couple in that I'm not sure that either of them are paying attention to each other in any emotional sense, but they are codependent.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
they're both just in it for companionship, and it's so obvious. And it makes me cringe because, you know, a long time ago, like I've been in relationships like that where you're just like, why? We don't even like each other. And it's not like we fight or say mean things, but it's like, we don't fuck. We don't have anything in common. Like we're just doing this because we're both individually sick and can't stand being alone.
Yeah.
And that's Janice. She cannot stand being alone.
Yeah.
And he says some of the things he says to her, it's a great mother jumping lyric, Jan.
Yeah.
Like, whoo.
Great.
I have a clip of their songwriting process.
Be accepted.
A major.
By the Lord.
E major.
Rejected and abandoned.
I don't know.
do you think it's too down? I mean, with the chorus, his blood cleans every stain.
Oh, it's a great mother jumping lyric, Jan.
Well, what are we selling? The Ajax here? His blood cleans stains?
Like, on the page, like, I feel like on the page you read that and be like, that is so stupid. And then in practice, it totally makes, like, it totally works for that guy with his stupid soul patch and ponytail. Oh, so pitch perfect.
Yeah, because it's like you can read so much into just that line. And one of the things you can read into is, okay, before this guy got into Jesus, he was a musician and probably an addict and probably swore like a sailor. And now, you know, he's like, he's changed his ways and he is...
That guy is like definitely sold like a family member's car for drugs at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. This guy, you know, definitely gave his nephew heroin and that nephew OD'd and he's trying to make up for it through Jesus.
I gotta admit
like that song slaps a little bit. Like there's something there was something about like the chord changes in that I was like, oh, I could see this working.
It's not the tendency for a writer would to just make their song be super bad, but then they play it and you're like, I could kind of see that being a song. It's not like that terrible. Like It's perfect.
It's like when you're flipping through the radio and you just like have some station on and you're like, okay, this is a normal song. And then all of a sudden you're like, and his love fills me up.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's the Christian station.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. It's every time I'm like on the road and I'm driving somewhere, you know, I'm like on the 5 or something like that. And I'm like flipping through the stations. If I hear a 90s alternative sounding song that I don't recognize, I'm like, it's Christian.
Yeah.
Because it's
if I don't know it, it's Jesus for sure.
Right. I was sort of fascinated with Christian I did not like Christian music, but I was fascinated with the idea of Christian pop music and Christian rock. Like I'm Jewish. Mm-hmm. So I have like, that's just totally not anything I grew up with at all.
Right.
But it fascinated me because I was like, these people really, really love Jesus and talk about him like he's like their boyfriend. And I don't know if you remember, but back in the sometime in the 90s, when they would have all those CD collection commercials for every kind of genre.
Songs of worship.
Yeah. And it would show the people in the audiences of the concerts and they were
eyes closed.
Sobbing.
You gotta have your eyes closed and your hand up
hands
in the air.
Hands in the air.
Hand in the air, eyes closed, girl with a really bad spiral perm. Just sobbing.
That's the move. Yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely like at that point it was more of like this adult contemporary Christian, and that's basically the music I think Janis is more trying to play, is adult contemporary Christian, whereas like the music I think that we're talking about was this more like Christian rock, which is just it all sounds like the fucking, you know, the band from Lost, you know, and but with Jesus in it. Like that shit was
sounds like David Silver's band on 90210.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah. Look at that. You haven't seen Melrose Place, but you have seen 90210.
Yeah. You should watch Melrose Place.
No.
So in Janice's storyline, basically Janice admits you know, to Tony kind of the grift straight up. Like she says to him, you know, because he criticizes her for the fact, like, come on, when's the last prayer meeting you went to? And she pauses and she says, I know. And, you know, me and this dude don't sleep together anymore. But at this point, it's about the Christian contemporary genre and trying to get some record company interest. And I think there's something about that kind of naked honesty about her grift that softens Tony's heart a little. Like he stops being the Grinch and his heart grows, you know, 3 sizes. And so he starts to like kind of believe that Janice maybe isn't lying about the fact that her you know, wrist is injured. And he pulls out his Christmas list and he adds one more entry to it, and it's Janice's Russian. And it is, I think, the sweetest Christmas gift I think I've ever heard anyone give anybody. Like, just the gift of revenge, you yeah. know, is such nice. A...
It really softens her heart, too. Like, once he does
oh,
it,
yeah.
she takes this as, like, the sweetest thing that he's ever done for her, which yeah. leads to the other moment with the Christian guy where she says, I think there needs to be, like, the brother yeah. element. And he... This line, like, just blew my mind. She says that, and he immediately acts like he knows what she exactly what she's saying, and he says, "He ain't heavy," which yeah. is.
I don't know, I barely
get it, yet it perfectly makes sense, and it's just such a bizarre line. Ugh.
Well, you know that song, "He Ain't Heavy."
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's sort of like, oh, he's my brother. I love him unconditionally, no matter what.
Like, I know the lyric. Like, I guess I don't understand, like, the themes of He Ain't Heavy, other than the fact that I know it's a song. But, yeah.
Yeah.
They played it in this PSA, this anti-drug PSA back in the day. And they played that song over, like, scenes of, like, two brothers together. But then at the end, it turns out one of the brothers OD'd.
Oh, fuck.
And, like, fucking died. And it's, like, honestly, like, one of those PSAs where you're like, I don't want to cry at this because it's really corny. And, like, yeah. you know, just say no bullshit. Mm. But, like, you guys got me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
so I
yeah.
I guess that's what me. I get. You think that's what they're referencing here?
Yeah.
No, I don't think they're referencing that PSA, but, like, for me, that song always reminds me of that PSA from my childhood where it's just fucking devastating.
It's funny. I feel like I've completely missed this song. What is He Ain't Heavy about a brother? Is that what that song's about?
Yeah. He says, because he's my brother, right? Doesn't he?
I don't know.
Like, it's like an old song. It's like from the 70s. Probably.
I need to listen to it. It puts the line into context because I had no idea.
You'll know it when you hear it.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. But yeah, Janice's reaction to this is just so adorable because, like, you're not sure how she's going to take it, and she takes it exactly the same way that her mother Livia took it whenever. You know, Johnny, her husband, Tony's father, would come back with steaks that he got because he beat the shit out of, you know, the guy who runs Satrials, which is like, there's something that really melts her heart when someone does violence for her. And it's like, she shares that with her mother in some way. It's just, it's very cute. And it's a great Christmas gift. I wish someone would beat the shit out of... you know, one of my enemies. I need to have more enemies.
Yeah. You need to get meaner.
yeah.
So then I guess the other, so it was hard to say whether this is a Janice episode. I guess it's like a sort of a Janice, sort of a Tony episode.
Yeah. It's a Tony.
And then, the other storyline is, Jackie Jr., which
yeah.
this storyline I do find slightly confusing where, well, first, I guess it goes back to Charmaine because for some reason, Charmaine is back at Vesuvio looking hot, which Tony feels compelled to tell Carmela about for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I mean, I think Carmela brought it up first, which was a mistake on her part because she just gets pissed off. But yeah, Charmaine, divorced Charmaine looking good. She's, you know, she's wearing tighter clothes and everyone at Vesuvio is looking at her and for some reason thinks it's okay to like tell her. And like, I mean, it's weird because it's like, it's one thing to say you look nice, I guess, but it's another thing entirely to just straight up stare at her tits and then be like, hey, better that you're around now. Huh, toots. It's like, why would you?
I thought they were just being polite because she clearly wanted someone to comment on how she looks.
How dare you, Vince? And what's interesting is that Tony, he says as much in a scene, like he ends up completely embodying the type of scumbag who just tells a random woman, hey, you look good, smile more. in the second scene that he has with Charmaine, which I have a clip of.
Carmela was right. You look great.
Thank you.
See, I feel like "you look great" is a fine compliment, but I
no,
think...
No, that was a good start.
But I think because he said Carmela was right, which is a weird way to preface it, that she somehow took offense to that part of it for whatever
reason. Here's why she took offense. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say, like, this seems like a maybe like a catty, like, oh, she thinks Carmela was being catty.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Like she was saying, oh, trying to gauge Tony's reaction by saying, doesn't Charmaine look nice? And expecting
right.
Tony to say, she looks like shit. You're the most beautiful woman in the world.
Right. Yeah. Always a good gamble.
Is that what we're supposed to say in that situation?
Yes,
I guess. Okay. I mean, if you're married to Carmela
sure.
and she's
yeah.
an incredibly jealous person.
Right. And you've also cheated multiple times on
yes.
her.
You always tell Carmela that the other women look like dog shit.
Yeah,
always.
Yeah.
That's just should be the general rule. But he fucking failed that. And that's why she got pissed, because he's like, mm-hmm. yeah, she does look nice or whatever. So to me, I took that scene as Charmaine knowing that Carmela was like judging her look in some way, whether it was positive or negative. But I mean, I've seen that before. I've had conversations with other women before, and not to generalize, please don't out reply me, but like where you're having a conversation with someone and maybe you don't like this person, or maybe it's the new girlfriend of your friend, like the, you know, of your friend's ex, and you just want to talk some shit about that person, like,
yeah.
oh, well, they're not pretty, you're way prettier than them, like, because you're building up your friend. So I would get the feeling like, oh, you guys were talking about
yes.
how I look.
Yeah.
What was she saying? Why was she fishing for your opinion on how I look?
And then Tony's reaction to that was super weird too, where he kind of like rubbed it in Carmela's face, which didn't make any sense. He's like, yeah, she looks great. I bet you thought she'd look like a piece of shit. And it was like,
yeah.
why would you assume that she would, what?
he uses the word crone, which,
no, crawl.
You know.
Crawl. He says crawl because he's thinking of crone and troll.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was
I got
a great
it.
Malapropism corner where he's like, I don't know, you know, like a crone or a troll. I don't know. Leave me alone.
Yeah,
that was
yeah,
great.
Yeah.
That was great.
I'm trying to give you a compliment.
Well, don't.
What's your fucking problem?
All these years I sat here and I kept my mouth shut. I don't want you and your boys coming in here. And look what happened. Look what you've done to my husband.
Arnie? I'm trying to help him.
Yeah, well, good luck. Because he's a friggin' mess.
Get the fuck out of here.
Where to?
Who gives a shit?
First of all, Artie has always been a mess.
Yeah.
That man has never not been completely on edge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he's also like the fact that he's more on edge has nothing to do with the fact that Tony Soprano is there. If Tony wasn't there making him feel cool, like he would have nothing. He would have this would have unraveled years ago, this marriage between Charmaine and Artie. So it's like it's to blame Tony for it, I think, is it's a little bit misplaced. But at the same time, I do love the fact that Tony, his response is, you know what? Fuck this place. We're never going here again. Let's try this new place. And then immediately cut to a strip club, which is just, you know, it's perfect.
It's funny because Silvio says, I've been meaning to check out the competition. And like originally I thought he meant the competition for Vesuvio, like they're going to go to another Italian restaurant. But he actually meant the competition for the Bing.
For so the Bing, yeah.
To the thing that's like the off-brand Bing. But then the part that confused me a little bit is that, you know, Tony sees Jackie Jr. at the strip club and he gets very mad at him for going to a strip club, which is, you know, I guess understandable, but clearly like hypocritical for a guy whose work is a strip club.
Yeah, but it makes sense though, because I mean, he is dating his daughter and, you know, this is his firstborn, his pride and joy, the one who's not a fucking dumbass like AJ, like the one who's actually gonna make it going to like Columbia. Like, I see,
would he, if Jackie Jr. had just been there having a drink, watching the girls dance like from somewhere in the bar with his friends, as opposed to getting a lap dance where he's like kissing on some girl's big fake boobs, Would Tony have been as mad about that?
Yeah, well, because in the previous episode, just look at his reaction to he finds Jackie Jr. at like an underground casino that he ends up going to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like his reaction to that was to yell at him and push him against the wall and tell him like he's fucking up.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely doesn't want him to be a gangster, which is clear. But I don't know if he would have gone all the way to like beating the shit out of him.
Yeah, no, but I think it was, to me, it was like, this is strike two, you know, it's like he sees him now, you know, and the fact that, yeah, he's getting a lap dance is definitely good, you know, grounds for him punching him in the dick or whatever he did, telling him he bottomed out, which I'm not entirely sure why he said you've bottomed out. Like part of me is like, is that like a gangster term for when somebody, you know, bets, you know, everything and then loses it all? Or is this like a recovery term where he's like, this is you've hit rock bottom and you need to get your life together.
I think also he was primarily really upset with him at the strip club in particular is because now he's forever going to picture the guy that his daughter is with as some guy who loves to motorboat chicks. And he's like, if he does that to some stranger, what's he doing to my daughter? It's like,
that's exactly right.
You know, you don't, I don't have kids, whatever, but like, it would be weird if I saw like, you know, my son or daughter's partner doing something sexual. I'd be like, I don't want to think about you in that context.
You don't want to know their kinks.
I don't want to know what you're into.
That's fair.
Definitely.
That's exactly what Tony would have done in that situation.
Of course.
And I think that's also what pisses Tony off about this is like a lot of this stuff is exactly what Tony would have done. Tony would have gone to the underground casino because he went there and Jackie was there. Tony would have gone to a strip club because he went there and Jackie was there. It's like for him, it's like he does not actually want Meadow to be with someone like him, you know, because he knows himself. He's like, I'm a piece of shit. He has a sufficient amount of self-loathing, I think, to just enough to be protective of his daughter and his daughter's future. So it makes sense to me that he would look at Jackie and be like, especially when he found the gun on him.
After he started beating the shit out of him already.
Right. Well, you know, the motorboating of the titties probably is the thing that set him over the edge. And then the gun was just, you know, the cherry on top.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. And then I think I want to get into something this episode that I think can't go overlooked. And that's the massive amount of random dumb Christmas chatter that happens between all the gangsters. Like, this is one of those episodes where I realize that what I also enjoy about The Sopranos, other than kind of like, you know, the great storylines and the drama, is just watching a bunch of idiots sit around and talk about nothing. Like it's so fantastic.
One of the things that I feel like that we don't have in our current era of you know, just adulthood is like a job as a place where you go to bullshit with your buddies. Cause I feel like for much of the 20th century, like the job really was a place where you go, you know, you go to a place and you chat, you know, over a water cooler or like over a carburetor or whatever the fuck it might be.
Yeah.
But you know, you talked about world events with your friends and it was a more social kind of world. Whereas I think now, or at least ever since I've been like a working adult, he didn't really like talk about like my coworkers were never really like my friends for the most part. And it wasn't a place where you went to go chat with people and relate with people.
Cause you do it online on social media.
Exactly.
You get all of your opinions. You put all your best opinions online. What you think are your best opinions.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you get into like kind of the more, just random chit chat you do through the group chat, you know, that's where you're having your conversations about, you know, it being weird that Santa doesn't have kids. And that's one of my favorite scenes. And I have a clip of it
Santa, you still haven't got one.
You want to do it?
Me? What do I know about?
I don't have kids.
You don't have to. Santa doesn't have any kids.
Yeah, that's strange. That Mr. and Mrs. Claus didn't have kids of their own.
Probably why they got into it in the first place.
I used to think the elves were their kids.
They were running a sweatshop over there.
There was something on TV. The original elves were ugly, traveled with Santa to throw bad kids a beating, and he gave the good ones toys.
The fucking Grinch. Maybe that's where they got the idea.
The fucking Dr. Seuss ripped it off.
That Grinch, man, that's where the money is. A couple of hundred mil, put Jim Carrey in the motherfucker.
Just talking about nothing. Yeah. Just like all of them, like just talking past each other. Somehow they're going like their segues are beautiful. And I just to me, it's like I could listen to this if this was a podcast, if it was just like seven Guidos talking about Christmas, talking about anything.
Thank God there's no podcast like that with the Sopranos cast members doing that.
No. There's nothing like that at all because there's only one Sopranos podcast and you're currently listening to it.
Another thing that they do right around this scene is another thing that I love about the Sopranos is that like normally expository dialogue feels like creaky and bad.
Yes.
Whereas like in the Sopranos, the expository dialogue gives you like these horrifying glimpses into terrible shit that they've done to the community. And I can just listen to that every day. And that's one of my, in terms of favorite, least favorite, that's one of my favorite moments of this episode is when Polly says, when Johnny Boy busted this place out and took it over and old man Satrial put a bullet in his own head, there was a lot of sadness on the block.
Yeah.
Two sentences, but.
I have a clip of that exact moment because I also thought it was so brilliant. Like the way that they mixed the horrifying violence that they live with every day and Christmas. And it's just together. It's so beautiful.
But we still got to find somebody to play Santa.
The fuck out of here.
That's fitting, you know. After all, it was your father who started this whole tradition.
That's right. When Johnny Boy busted this place out and took it over. An old man Satrial put a bullet in his own head. There was a lot of sadness on the block.
Nothing a Christmas ham couldn't fix. Come on, T.
The ham.
Yeah, nothing a Christmas ham couldn't fix. You know, like the just maybe the darkest shit ever. And then back to like, hey Tony, you wanna play Santa Claus?
For like the children, no less. For the children, this is an event they're putting together for the children.
Yeah.
I mean, Polly is like the ultimate, like he's like he's so zen in his nihilism, you know? He's just there's that famous quote with Christopher where Christopher's like, do you ever think nothing good's ever going to happen to you? And Polly's like, so what? Nothing ever did.
Yeah, that's right. And he's just like, and I'm still here.
Yeah.
And, you know, and shit. Yeah, it's like, hey, nothing good needs to happen to you. You just surviving is good.
Yeah.
Right. And there is something about that kind of like, you know, low expectation for yourself and for what life has to offer that does feel like, I don't know, it does feel very zen. There is something about that. It's like, yeah, it's like, it reminds me like early on in recovery when I was like my bar for, you know, having a good day was like, number one, not using drugs. Mm-hmm. And then like only feeling sad for a little bit.
Totally.
And I was just like, I had a pretty good day. And it was just like your goals shrink down to just like, if I can just reach these two, you know, boxes, I can check them off, then I'll be good. And then Paulie's just someone who just like that. That's how he's lived his whole life. It's, you know, except for, you know, the murder and stuff.
Right. But he's like, nothing good has to happen to you. You don't have to. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. 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 And that's kind of like, this is the I think, the final storyline and to me the most rewarding Christmassy storyline of the episode, which is that the, you know, the boys need someone to play Santa for the kids, for this Christmas tradition, and they can't find someone to play Santa, which is a very adorable, I think. It's a storyline that could work in any show, like sitcom, drama, doesn't matter. But on The Sopranos, it works so well that I was just shocked at how funny and perfect of a storyline this was. And they do eventually get Bobby Bacala to play Santa, but not before threatening his life.
Well, that's what's so funny about the storyline is it is true that this could work in any other genre of television. This concept of like, we need our friend, but in the, you know, PAX channel or the Hallmark channel of this episode, it would end with Bobby Bacala realizing that Santa was inside him all along.
Right. Exactly.
but instead it ends with him basically like telling a kid to fuck off, like get the fuck off my lap.
Which is, if we're doing favorite, least favorite scene, my absolute favorite scene is Bobby Bacala just trying to hold it together enough to play Santa. And I have a clip of that.
You were just here.
I was not.
Yeah, you were. You were on my lap 5 minutes ago.
No, I wasn't.
Yes, you were. Now you're going on Santa's list and you're getting nothing.
Fuck you, Santa.
You don't talk that way to Santa. Get back there. Tell Santa you're sorry.
Go on.
I'm sorry, Santa.
That's better.
What the hell's wrong with you, Bobby? You got to get to your own.
I don't want to do this. Shyness is a curse.
I feel like the kids' line read of fuck you, Santa is so funny for whatever reason.
It's so perfect. Yeah, that kid is brilliant. I think it's so rare in any episode of The Sopranos to see a bad performance by a bit actor that like his perfect fuck you Santa was just like expected at this point for me. Like everyone on the show is so good. They cast everyone perfectly, even the children.
He committed so hard. He's just like, fuck you, Santa.
Fuck you, Santa.
It's like it was building. Oh, so good.
I really appreciated too that the mom reprimanded the child instead of what you maybe like a stereotypical parent of today that was like a non-Jersey Italian parent, like an LA parent would have been like, how dare you scold my child?
Yeah, no, totally. That's exactly what would have happened today. They would have said like, you yell at my child. He is a child. It's like, yeah, he's trying to steal a second toy. And it's like, he is a child. It's and I think you're an accomplice. I think you're trying to help him.
Yeah, in perfect Sopranos fashion, there is no good guy, which is like this the best thing about the show always. Like, they're both bad. Like, Santa is a dick, and then the kid was trying to scam another toy, and they're both bad, and it's wonderful.
I love it.
So they find Bobby, he wears the Christmas suit, and I think the final scene for me is a personal favorite. It's time to open gifts. It's Christmas time. AJ gets another sweater, and in peak AJ fashion is totally bummed about it because that's just who AJ is. AJ is someone who gets clothing for Christmas and yells about it because he wants DVDs of The Matrix. Meanwhile, Meadow gets Tony a gift that is such a perfect, hilarious callback that I just was, for me, it's a personal favorite, and I have a clip of that.
Big Mouth Billy Bass, what is that?
Oh, those are good.
Wait till you see what it says. I want to see this on your desk. Promise?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is hilarious. Wait, Mom.
There's something about the whole family sitting around playing a Big Mouth Billy Bass and laughing about it like it's the funniest thing they've ever seen. Like it's hilarious because it's so fucking stupid watching AJ's face like, oh, this is gonna be good. But at the same time, I'm not even above it. That was me and my family. We all loved that Big Mouth Billy Bass sweater.
I was going to say that the Big Mouth Billy Bass fish is such a perfect time capsule to 2001. And because I remember that year during Christmas, everyone's fucking dad or grandpa, like the person you can't buy anything for because A, they either have everything or they're impossible to shop. They don't want anything. You get it for like your grandpa or your dad or something.
Yeah.
Everyone's fucking grandpa or dad got that gift.
It was a phenomenon. It was like the novelty gift of the turn of the century. And yeah. I'm like positive it'll be in history books.
It should be. And another thing about that, just to talk about that time capsule, that one of the things I love about The Sopranos is it is such a perfect time capsule for the aughts, but at the same time, it still remains like such a timeless show. Like it's not one of those shows that is like, oh, this is so dated.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just like, it's almost a period piece now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
It works. To me, it's in the same sense, it's kind of, and I'm not trying to like compare it to, you know, I'm not trying to suck its dick, but it reminds me a lot of like movies like Citizen Kane and like The Godfather, in which like they so much invented, like the filmmaking itself was so groundbreaking that everything that came after that just did what they did.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel dated. Like you watch Citizen Kane and you wouldn't be able to tell what year that it was in. I mean, you would think like, oh, was this movie made in 1955? You know, if you didn't know. And like, it's the same thing, I think, with The Godfather, where it's like you watch it and you're not like, oh, this is a 70s movie. You know,
right.
It's and in the same way with Sopranos being the beginning of kind of like prestige TV, like high budget prestige TV. It's like, to me, it doesn't feel dated at all. Although I have heard people say that the first couple of seasons to them felt way more dated. And I will say that generally holds up. There are moments in the first couple of seasons where it's got that kind of a little bit of a 90s feel. But it is. It's timeless and wonderful and a time capsule all at the same time. All right. Finally, I just have one gabavafangul, Vince.
Okay. Oh, we have a couple of voicemails too, if we want to play.
We have voicemails.
We want to play unvetted voicemails. Which
you know what?
Fun.
I think we should finally start doing it. You know,
let's
it's one
it.
Of those things we've asked people to do it all the time, and then they just keep sending them, and we keep not playing it on this podcast. So let's do it. It's voicemail time.
All right. Well, here's one. It's kind of looks kind of long. I don't know what it's about because the Google transcription's all garbled, but let's go for it. Why not?
I'm worried. Let's do it.
Matt, Vince. Oh! Just got done listening to the episode of the Muxadel. B+? You give every episode a B+. It's a great episode. Love the episode, love the guest, love the commentary, love the fucking mix. You'll be fucking dying with the spaghetti. Jesus fucking Christ. What a great scene, and also, like, fucking tremendous remix. Secondary to this, if you've ever heard of such things as called a YouTube poop, kind of put her on feelers in the internet, see if anyone's ever, if that rings any bells.
What the hell did he just say?
YouTube coop?
That's what I heard.
You know, I don't know how you would reach me. I don't fucking care enough to... any text message is this fucking number. I don't know if you can get that. Whatever. Point is, in every episode of B+, come on. You loved it. I loved it. Perfect. You think of no bad scenes every episode of B+. A- or an A. Come on. Have some balls. Anyway, love the episode. Love you guys. Mwah. Good night. Bye.
They're catching up on our shticks. They might have figured it out.
I have a feeling that some people still haven't figured out that we give every episode a B+. As a bit, and I thought it would have been clear by now.
Yeah, it's
right. You asked people to rate you a B+.
No, at the end of every episode, we like say, well, what do you think? Solid B+. Because it's like an hour and a half talking about the episode, but then we give it like a dumb grade that doesn't mean anything.
Also just not quite good enough for people who love The Sopranos.
It's insulting.
Insulting. It's like insulting. B+, like, ooh, almost there, as if we have the refined taste to grade it.
It's like the most pedantic of grades, which is great.
It's my favorite grade.
Okay, we have another one.
Hey, Matt, Vince, home of the world's only Sopranos podcast. I just want to say a sincere thank you. for all bumpers, all the laughs, all the good times you guys share about the Sopranos, from not knowing jack shit about Edgar Allan Poe to, I don't know how you didn't know that Lady Gaga wasn't in an episode. It's like common knowledge. But anyway, I'm just driving from one hospital to another for check on the trailer for a vaccine trial. Good to know that I'm out here busting my ass trying to get patients treatment. You guys, dicking around talking about the Sopranos. Beautiful stuff. Keep it up.
That's what we're doing.
Some people are saving the world by helping with vaccines, and some people are making Sopranos podcasts. Equally important.
Look, you know, there's varying degrees of essential in terms of workers. And
absolutely.
Look, we're also essential. But
I agree.
Just maybe a different plane of essential.
It's a different level. But you know what? As a podcaster myself, we get those emails like, thank you. I was working at the hospital all day and I love your show. And I'm like, oh, my God, no, thank you. Like, yeah. I'm just a piece of shit with a microphone. But you know what?
Hey, we're important, too.
Because
here's the thing. What else are they going to listen to on their commute to the place where every day hundreds of people are dying in their communities?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, listen, somebody's got to add some levity to this fucking dumpster fire of a year. And I'm glad that it can be podcasters who come to save the day.
We are the real heroes, which I think is what you're trying to say there.
This is about us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
about us.
Listen to our new podcast, The Real Heroes. It's where we just talk about how great we are for not doing, lifting a finger to help the needy. So I guess all in all, this episode, I don't know, what would you rate it, Vince?
That's a tough one. I'm gonna say solid B+.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, I'm gonna do something different this week. After that phone call, I do feel kind of bad about it. So this week I'm gonna give this episode B+. Solid B plus. Yeah. B+. It's a perfect grade. What about you, Rachel? What do you think?
Well, solid B+. And you know why? Because I got all D's in high school.
Hell yeah.
To me, that is a win.
Yeah, that is. I mean, hey, a B+, that's the person like that, you could get a job with that.
You know what? My parents would have been so fucking happy if I got a B+ in high school in any of my classes. They would have been over the moon.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like my grade point average was a solid B+.
That's good.
Well, because
look, I'm comparing it to me. I had to go to continuation high school because I was such a fuck up.
I don't know if this is right or not, but isn't it that an A is 3.0 to 4.0?
That's B is 3.0 to 4.0. Wait, no.
An A is 4, B is 3.
Yes.
Yeah.
B is 3.
Well, so what's a 2.95?
That's like a C+ average, basically.
Fuck. Okay. So,
or
I got
B-
a solid
average, depending on how you want to look
at it. Okay. We'll call it, we'll call it a B. So I got a B minus. It's a B minus average.
I hate the whole thing. They're already giving us credit scores when we're teenagers.
Yeah, that is true. It's pretty fucked up.
It's really fucking mean. At my continuation high school, we didn't have grades. If we made it to school, they were like, yes.
Well, they gave you an automatic 600 on your SAT if you didn't stab anyone at continuation.
Honestly true. We had a smoking section at our school. We would rather you didn't leave campus. They just didn't want us to leave. They wanted to monitor us. Yeah. And you know what? That's the only reason I graduated high school. So
it's
like, God bless.
It's like the institutional equivalent of your mom being like, well, if you're going to drink, you might as well drink here.
Yeah.
It really was.
Well, the fact that there was a smoking section at your continuation high school does make you the coolest guest that we've had on this podcast. So thank you so much for coming on, Rachel. Where can people find you online?
Well, you can find me on my Twitter at the Rachel Fisher. I talk a lot about reality TV and about what food I'm eating, if that's what you're interested in. And you can find my podcast, Hollywood Crime Scene. It's a comedy podcast that's also heavily researched, and we talk about crimes involving celebrities or crimes that occurred in Los Angeles.
Nice. Nice. So get those wherever podcasts are sold, everybody.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/FraughtCast for all of our bonus episodes in which we talk about any number of shows and movies. So go to Patreon.com/FraughtCast, FROTCAST, FraughtCast@gmail.com for any questions, comments, concerns. Email us. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much again for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing. Don't
stop. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.